Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. So happy to be with you here on a Monday. Thanks for being with us. Trent's here, Trent Horn, apologist, speaker extraordinaire, and author of a huge stack of books here at Catholic Answers and with other publishers as well. Among his books, Persuasive Pro-Life, Why We're Catholic, and Answering Atheism. That's what we're going to do this hour, answer some atheism. I kind of pitched it to you as if you're an atheist, call, but if you want to, if you're a believer yourself and you'd like some help answering atheist objections to belief in God, you're welcome to call as well, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Hello, Trent Horn.
Hello, Mr. Cy Kellett. I like the new studio setup.
Do you? I like it, too. I feel very fancy in here.
I know. It it has a very Pints with Aquinas feel to it.
It does?
It does. You're in the footsteps. I still have to... I want the same treatment here in my little remote office slash closet.
Do you want someone to come into Texas and tidy up your closet for you? I mean, what are you asking?
Yes, I do. I want to have the little... you know, soft red glowing lights, and I want two light bulbs hanging behind me.
There's a kind of lighting that they used to do in Hollywood. Oh, what's it called? Where they light the face from below, but there was these directors who could do it, and they could make you look just beautiful. It didn't matter how you looked. You just looked beautiful.
Below? Isn't that what you do when you tell a campfire story? You hold the flashlight below you,
yeah,
and you
yeah.
look really gruesome?
But it had other aspects to it. I can't remember what the name
was. Oh,
of it,
sure.
But
my favorite...
I want that
My
lighting.
Favorite trick they did... Oh, yeah. I want that, and I want a bunch of Vaseline put on the camera lens.
Yes.
I want to look like super soft and ethereal.
The guys here, they never understand. Why is there Vaseline on the lenses again? It's not me. Don't know how that happened. 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Our guest is Trent Horn. I am your host, Cy Kellett, coming to you from the brand new, beautiful studio here at Catholic Answers. And you are welcome to call whether you're atheist or not. Please, if you're an atheist person and that you would like to, well, first of all, if you'd like to yell at Trent, I always enjoy it when people call and yell at Trent. But if you'd like to argue the atheist position with us, you're very welcome here, 888-318-7884. But maybe you're just a person who would like to be able to answer a particular atheist objection, maybe something that's presented on the internet or in something that you read, or a friend or acquaintance challenges you with a good challenge on why you should not believe in God, and you'd like some help with it, 888-318-7884. That's all right. You'll talk to all those people, right, Trent?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about issues related to atheism, the existence of God, divine attributes. We'll have a blast. So whether you're Catholic or a Christian, you have a question about atheism or the existence of God or an argument for or against God, whoever you are, I'd love to chat about all of that. It'd be a lot of fun.
888-318-7884. I've never asked you this, Trent, but like in this idea of defending God, you know, that which is part of what an apologist does. Who are your heroes in that regard? Who do you go, oh, that's a guy that really, or man or woman who like that person really helped me get a clear view of how you do this?
Oh, you mean like defending the existence of God and combating atheism?
Exactly.
Okay. Well, a long list of people. Obviously, you have the historical elements, people like St. Anselm, St. Thomas Aquinas. They weren't dealing with atheists per se, but they put forward important arguments that'd be necessary to do that. When it comes to modern defenders, if I had to throw out a few names, it's a mixture of Catholic and Protestant philosophers. I don't agree with everything that each of these philosophers espouses, but I've found them helpful. On the Catholic side, I've enjoyed Brian Davies, Edward Faser. I'm trying to think of others who I've read. David Oderberg would be another example. Alexander Pruss from Baylor University is a genius. I really enjoy his wide variety of writings. On the Protestant side, of course, I've really enjoyed the work of William Lane Craig, both in his writings and his debate formats. J.P. Moreland is very good. And I just try to take the best. Josh Rasmussen is a very good Protestant philosopher in this regard. I'm going to actually see Josh and other people at a conference in Houston in August, Cy. It's going to be a conference on defending Christianity. I am going to be the only Catholic speaker, actually. Everyone else is Protestant, but I was invited to present Aquinas and Divine Simplicity. So with mostly Protestant audience, I think it'll be a hoot. I'm really excited for
I'm
it.
So glad. I'm so glad that you're able to do that, because we have essentially the same task, don't we? I mean, whether it's Protestant or Catholics, when it comes to this, defending the existence of God,
sure.
which often is associated with also defending the goodness of God. You have to, these ancillary things that you have to defend with the existence of God, the transcendence of God and whatnot. It's essentially the same task.
Right. I think that among Catholics and Protestants, we do believe in the core doctrine, belief in one God who is the uncreated creator of the universe. Though among Protestants, we also, among Protestants, we differ on important points, though. We differ on things like whether God is simple, he's not composed of parts, whether he's timeless or temporal. Some Protestants believe that God is not all-powerful, for example, or not all-knowing. So we disagree on even some important elements of God, but we're all pretty much united in defending monotheism, and so we can find common ground in that respect.
A call's already coming in for you, as is this entirely expected when you're here. Trent, shall we go to the phones?
Let us go
to the phones. Connor in Shreveport, Louisiana, listening on the new and improved Catholic Answers Live app. Connor, go ahead with your question for Trent Horn.
Hi. A month or so ago, Trent was with a debate. I mean, was in a debate with an atheist on High School Aquinas. I forgot his name.
Yes.
But I think it's like Alex something. But
Alex O'Connor.
He
yes.
He brought up animal suffering, and I was just wondering, how would you answer the question? How could an all good and loving God allow animal suffering outside the actions of humans?
Sure. So to answer this question, this is a subset of the problem of evil. The problem of evil says, how can God allow suffering or evil or suffering? Why would an all good, all powerful God allow suffering in general? And the standard answer is that, well, if God has good reasons for allowing suffering, then it can be justified. So we look at some suffering of human beings, and we would say, okay, excuse me, why would God let human beings suffer? Well, sometimes we suffer from moral evil because human beings have free will. And so it's the good of free will outweighs the badness of the suffering that's caused, and God can compensate humans in the afterlife for the suffering they endure in this life. So the problem of animal suffering comes up here when people will say, all right, those reasons make sense for human suffering, but what good reasons could there be for God to justify animal suffering? Now, I would say here first that the burden of proof is on the atheist to say there are no good, God could not possibly have any good reasons. It's his argument. And so if we can see God, there are good reasons that justify human suffering to show that God can be justified in doing this, he can bring more good from it. If those reasons exist, just because we can't think of reason, even if we couldn't think of any reasons to justify animal suffering, it wouldn't prove there are no good reasons, because we're very limited as human beings, and God is infinite in knowledge and power. So I would say we're not in a good position to say there are no such reasons. But number two, I would say that certain reasons do present themselves as being plausible. One reason could be that without the ability to feel pain, certain animals wouldn't really be animals. Like if a deer couldn't feel pain, how would it know to run away from danger? How would it know to protect itself? Unless God just controlled all of its actions, then it wouldn't. So there it'd be like, well, can God make, are they really, to say they're animals without pain, even though they don't feel anything, it's like saying you can have humans who don't have free will and just do whatever God tells them. I think it'd be kind of a contradiction. There's other reasons people have proposed. There's a minority view that God could compensate certain animals in the afterlife if those animals have continuous experiences of things. So it's not popular in the Catholic sphere, especially among Thomists, but it has been offered by certain people. Some Franciscans have argued for it. Also, I would argue that the good of the animals existing themselves justifies suffering they may endure. And this was an example I gave in the debate with Alex. I asked Alex if he could, if let's say we evacuated human beings from Earth, should we instantly destroy the Earth to prevent animals from suffering after we left? I think most people would say that we shouldn't. But if that's the case, we see that it can be good just for those animals to exist, even though they suffer. So if we let them exist in spite of suffering, that shows it's highly plausible there are good reasons for God to allow those animals to exist, even though they may suffer. So I hope that was a helpful introduction. I would recommend, if you want to go deeper on the subject, go to the Classical Theism podcast hosted by my friend John DeRosa. There are two episodes there, episode 126 and 127 at classicaltheism.com. One is The Problem of Animal Suffering with Kyle Keltz, who wrote a book on Thomism and animal suffering. And the other is Father Christopher Steck, a Jesuit theologian, who wrote a book on animal suffering. So Classical Theism podcast, you can hear their different perspectives on the issue. There's another book by Michael Murray, Nature Red in Tooth and Claw, that offers others. I think Trent Doherty has a book called All Animals Great and Small. There are a variety of reasons that are offered, but I think at the end of the day, no atheist has shown God could never have a good reason for allowing animals to endure suffering in this life. And so the problem of evil from animal suffering doesn't succeed. But I hope that's helpful. Check out those resources. And thank you so much for calling in.
Thanks, Connor. Appreciate it. I got to go to a break and we'll come back with more Answering Atheism with Trent Horn. Trent, I got to just read a quick ad here, Trent. The ad says, Sai, chat with Trent a bit on what it... I'm supposed to chat with you, Trent. Sorry, I wasn't supposed to read the ad. I was supposed to chat with you.
Right here, ready for a chat.
Okay, so tell me something about your upcoming webinar that you're doing. It's a pro-life webinar on June 15th at 5:30 p.m. Pacific. Do you know what I'm referring to?
Yes. So I'm going to be doing what I'm hoping, if these seminars garner interest, is to do a series of small group webinars for just a small group of people to sign up so they can have one-on-one time with me. We'll be going over important topics, and I'll be able to do Q&A directly, help to coach people in responses. I want to give people that one-on-one time with me that they might not get. Like at the School of Apologetics, our lectures are pre-recorded, so you can get a lot of content there. But to get that one-on-one time, I want to just start doing these live virtual seminars for people to take part in, and limited. There's only a few dozen seats that will be available. So if you want to sign up, you should do it soon. You can sign up for that at TrentHornClasses.com. So if you go to TrentHornClasses.com, TrentHornClasses.com, you can sign up for the live webinar I'll be doing on June 15th for Persuasive Pro-Life. You can also, if you have students who want to do homeschool theology courses live with me, you can sign up there. Only 25 students are allowed for each of those classes. And starting next fall, I'm going to take students over the next three semesters through the Catechism, the New Testament. But all of that is at TrentHornClasses.com. Go to the website, and especially for this June 15th seminar, which is capped, you can check that out and sign up and get one-on-one time with me to be coached on pro-life apologetics. So check it out, TrentHornClasses.com. You can go there to sign up.
Trent is our guest. We're talking about answering atheism this hour, whether you are an atheist. First of all, you're very welcome here if you're an atheist, or you're a believer but needs help answering atheist objections. 888-318-7884 is the number to call.
There's only one Catholic Answers Live. The Aquinas Writing Advantage Program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Prayer is the only truly creative power in the world. God is the only one who can create something out of nothing. And when we pray, we welcome God into our hearts. And once He's there, He's going to do something. He's going to change things. He's going to transform us. He's going to make something out of the nothing that is me. That's the power of prayer for me. It's the only power that's guaranteed to change my life. And the only way I know to make that happen is through prayer.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kelly, your host, Trent Horn, here as our guest. And that's always fun. That's a great way to spend a Monday afternoon or a Tuesday morning if you're in the Philippines or Guam. I finally found out how far away Guam is, or Australia, or Malaysia. Give me some help, Darren. Japan, Shanghai, China. If you're in any of those places, hello, and thanks for being with us on this Tuesday morning. Answering Atheism, our topic this hour, the number 888-318-7884. How about we go to Rob in Seattle, Washington, listening on Sacred Heart Radio. Rob, thanks for waiting. Go ahead with your atheist, or I don't know, with your question or comments for Trent.
Yeah, so I typically will hear atheists say that extraordinary events like the resurrection require extraordinary evidence, and you can't prove the resurrection with like historical data, biblical sources or non-biblical sources from the first century. So how would I respond to that?
Well, I think the best way to respond is to ask them to define their terms and to defend their assumptions. For example, I would ask them, okay, what do you mean by the word extraordinary? What do you mean extraordinary events? Well, what makes an event extraordinary? Because that's a very subjective term. So yeah, if you are an atheist, for example, to hear someone say, God answered my prayer, that's gonna be a really extraordinary event because you don't believe there is a God. But as a Christian, if somebody told me God answered my prayer, that's not extraordinary at all. Now, it could be a prayer for something that's rather mundane, and so I don't consider it that extraordinary for God to help someone with this, you know, in their life in that regard. So it sounds sensible, but there's a lot of things loaded in there. Say, well, what do you mean by extraordinary? If by extraordinary you just mean miraculous, then why are you making a distinction between miraculous events and non-miraculous events? As if you're saying, well, we know that miraculous events don't happen. How do you know they don't happen? It seems to me, they'll say, well, because we can't believe this miracle happened in history because we have all of this testimony of miracles not happening. How do you know miracles don't happen? Well, because there is no God to cause these miracles. As C.S. Lewis said in his book, Miracles, it's kind of arguing in a circle. So I would say, what do you mean by extraordinary? If you just mean miraculous, then you're kind of begging the question. You're already assuming miracles don't happen. If you're saying that extraordinary events require extraordinary evidence, extraordinary is basically a synonym for miraculous, then what you're saying is miraculous events need miraculous evidence. Well, if that's the case, why would I believe the evidence exists if it's miraculous? You need miraculous evidence for that, and you'd have this infinite regress. And so I feel like the atheist has set up a position where you could never be justified in believing in a miracle, no matter what the evidence is. And you could check out my debate with Matt Dillahunty on this, that, like, for Matt, for example, he has never articulated when he would believe in God or believe a miracle had occurred. Because he could, and Lewis talks about this in his book, Miracles, you could always assume you were hallucinating. We know people have hallucinations. So unless you already believe God exists, you're going to be pretty closed off to miracles in the first. So I think when atheists are talking about determining miracles in history, that's why when I debated Dillahunty on the resurrection, in my opening statement, I gave an argument for the existence of God, actually, because that makes it easier to believe miracles can happen if you believe there is a power capable of intervening in the laws of nature. Now, if maybe they'll say, well, we don't mean miraculous, we mean like infrequent. You know, if it doesn't, you know, we've never heard of an event like this happening before, so we need really good evidence for it. But by that logic, you would fail to believe in many historical events. You know, Hannibal crossing the Alps with war elephants that's extraordinary. If I told you I went over the Matterhorn with an elephant, that would be, or by the Matterhorn with an elephant, it's pretty extraordinary. And yet we're taking the word of Roman historians that wrote decades later. When the Wright brothers flew an airplane in, what was it, like 1903? There were scientific papers journal articles that had come out a few years before, saying that heavier than air fixed wing flight would be impossible. And yet, would you believe someone who said, by that logic, at that time, if someone told you, I saw the Wright brothers fly a plane, you couldn't believe them because it was so infrequent, even if it was a group of people who produced reliable testimony. So I'd recommend, Rob, when you talk to an atheist about proving whether miracles happen, you got to get them to lay the groundwork to say, all right, by what standard do we use to determine if something happened in the past? When is testimonial evidence allowed? Because that's how we know like 99% of history, especially ancient history, is by testimony. What testimony do we need? Well, if it's multiple accounts and there's evidence they're sincere, like they're willing to be martyred, and we have groups of people, so it's unlikely they're hallucinating, that kind of raises the bar and makes it more likely we can trust the testimony. So you got to get them to explain what they mean by extraordinary events, and then get them to commit to what standard has to be met before you'll believe a certain event happened. Ordinary or extraordinary, any event, what standard has to be made. Finally, I'll say, Rob, it has to be taken into account. Sometimes people will use this analogy. If I told you there was a dog in my garage, you wouldn't need evidence. If I told you there was a dragon in my garage, well, you would need evidence. That's extraordinary. And so it's kind of like the resurrection, right? Well, I would say, yeah, you need good evidence, but not miraculous evidence. In the case, and this is Carl Sagan's example, the late free thinker Carl Sagan, atheist, whatever. Sagan's dragon in the garage. Here's the problem. When someone tells me they have a dragon in their garage, I don't believe them, not just because of lack of evidence, but I have a good reason to believe dragons don't exist, because if they existed, we would see them a lot more. They're a very large animal. And like other large animals, we'd expect to find them in the ecosystem. Since we don't, I'm already very prejudiced. This person does not mean a fire-breathing dragon. If they mean a Komodo dragon, well, maybe. So that's what I would say with the resurrection, though, of like, say, take Jesus's resurrection. We're not, you know, it's not the same as Sagan's dragon, because we don't have evidence that Jesus's resurrection, it did not happen. We don't have testimony saying that the apostles recanted, for example, of their belief that Jesus rose from the dead. Or if dragons existed, we'd see a ton of evidence, and we don't see it. So there's good reason to believe they don't exist. But if Jesus rose from the dead and only appeared to the people described in the New Testament, we would expect the evidence we have now, which are churches, tradition, and sacred writings. So we have the evidence we would expect. The question is, does that evidence, is it strong enough to support that belief? Is it reliable enough? That's what you'd have to pin them on. So I threw a lot out there at you, but is that at least a helpful start to run through that?
Yeah, that was extremely helpful. Thank you.
Okay, super good.
Thanks, Rob. Answering Atheism this hour, Trent Horn, our guest, and we go now to Huntington Beach right here in California. John, listening on the new and improved Catholic Answers Live app in Huntington Beach, go ahead with your question for Trent Horn.
Sure. Thank you for taking my call. I'll start with a compliment. You know, you guys actually invite atheists to call your show. I'm an atheist. I've called before. You treat people really well. And I find that when I talk to other religious folks outside the Catholic faith, that I get kind of treated like something that just crawled out from under a rock when I tell them, yeah, I don't believe in God. I'm an atheist. So I really do appreciate, you know, your willingness to have respectful discourse, I think Trent calls it.
Sure. Thank you, John.
With all of that, I'm called to talk about, oftentimes objective moral values or moral values are kind of brought into the discussion to sort of prove that there's a God.
Sure.
From an atheist worldview, I obviously can't believe that. If I don't believe there's a God, then obviously moral values don't come from God, at least in my worldview. So sure. I would have to say that there is no God and all moral values come from human beings, which mm-hmm. I think is actually the true situation that they're in. And I'm not saying that's a good situation. I'm not saying that's a situation that I think, you know, that I like. And it seems uh-huh. that there was a divine creator of morality and we could follow that morality and that led to flourishing or whatever that divine creator wanted us to be living like. That could potentially be a lot better situation than the situation we're in. Well,
John, let me jump in, and we might have to take a break because we have a hard break coming up in 2 minutes. So I want to carry on the conversation after we return. But I find sometimes the term moral values can be kind of squishy, because in one sense, you could say moral values come from human beings, because a value is something that we desire, we consider important. So just the same as social and cultural and sport values come from humans. But I like the term moral facts, which, you know, related to moral realism. Like, there are just some facts that are true or false, independent of human beings. That humans don't create the moral facts, they discover them. Like, there's a fact: it is wrong to directly kill an innocent human being, or it is wrong to rape people. Those are true, but what makes them true, and can atheists explain that? So I'll recap when we come back, but I would like to chat with you a little more about that.
John, with very kind words for us from Huntington Beach, thanks. Hang on, we'll just take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Answering Atheism with Trent Horn on Catholic Answers Live.
This is Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione of San Francisco. Thank you for listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Have you enrolled in the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics? Let me ask you a more important question. Do you believe as a Catholic that you have an obligation to share the Catholic faith? In fact, the Church has answered this question, and the answer is that all confirmed Catholics are obliged to share the faith. It's actually in canon law. Catholic Answers is here to help you fulfill that obligation. Our School of Apologetics courses will equip you to help all the people you come in contact with understand what the Church teaches and why. A great place to start is with all the Catholics in your life. Learn the art of apologetics from the best of the best and start sharing the gospel today. Visit schoolofapologetics.com. That's schoolofapologetics.com.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Most of us Catholic parents agree our number one goal in life is to pass on the faith to our children. But here's the bad news. Today's world has a million ways to steal your kid's soul. Don't be afraid, says Father Sebastian Walsh. God loves your children even more than you do, and he desires their salvation more than anything. In his groundbreaking new book, Always a Catholic, Father Walsh shows you how to cooperate with God to bring about the fulfillment of his will for your kids. Always a Catholic reminds us that keeping our kids in the faith is about the way we live our Catholicism in our own lives and as a family from day to day. Order your copy of Always a Catholic by visiting shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, answering atheism this hour with our guest, Trent Horn. Trent, the author of a whole bunch of books, including Persuasive Pro-Life, Why We're Catholic, Things the Saints Never Said, Answering Atheism, and many more. This hour, Answering Atheism, our topic. And if you have questions about how to answer a particular atheist objection, you're welcome to call. And if you are an atheist, we'd love to hear from you, 888-318-7884. If you'd like to try to convince us of the foolishness of our ways in believing in God, that's perfectly fine. Or if you just want to challenge some of our thinking, very welcome. 888-318-7884. We were talking with John in Huntington Beach before we went to the break, and we don't have John on the line anymore. So, John, call back. If we dropped you, I apologize for that. But Trent, you wanted to finish up your response to John's question about the relationship between belief in God and morals.
Yeah, so it's interesting that John said, well, if morals might only come from human beings, I may not like it, but that's just the way it is. I would say, well, why should we believe that? We have very deep-seated understandings of what morals are. And my view would be that morals are something, moral facts are things we discover, we don't create. We do get better. We can get better at understanding morality, so we can make moral progress, just like we make mathematical progress, even though we don't create mathematics. So I would say that when we're talking about morality in this vein and understanding it, we can root it back to what's just been brought up to say, all right, should we strive for moral progress? But if we're talking about progress, it's like, well, if like I would ask you this, have we made fashion progress? So that's pretty subjective. Some people would say yes. Some people would say, I wish we went back to top hats and tailcoats. fashion just changes. It's not progress, really. But morality, we would say we've made progress in areas and we've made regress in other areas, like with the protection of the unborn. But progress and regress only makes sense if there's an objective standard that is beyond what human beings come up with. And to me, since morality is something that involves persons, whatever this is beyond humans that is the grounding of morality, it itself would have to be personal in nature. So it couldn't be a force. It couldn't be an abstract idea. It would have to be some kind of infinite person that just is goodness itself. And so I think that makes sense in the classical view of God as just perfect goodness, the perfect act of being.
John, again, the invitation is there if you'd like to call back and we'll continue. Oh, John's back. Okay, John, go ahead.
Did you hear that, John?
I heard most of what Trent said, not 100% of it, and I'm blaming Cy Kellett for dropping my call, but
Seems pretty reasonable, John. That seems like a reasonable position to take.
Anyway, I think that I did hear a little bit what Trent was talking about. I don't really find this an argument that convinces me that there is or might be a God. It really sounds to me like an argument why people would want there to be a God for sure. And why they might make up that there's a God. But if you're an atheist, and it does seem to me that atheists really struggle with this. Like, they just can't admit that moral values, if there is no God, that they're not intrinsic, they're not eternal, they're not perfect, that they would change all the time. I would say that that's what we actually are seeing occurring with human moral values. But as an atheist, human moral values have to come from human beings. There wouldn't be a God source for those moral values. So that would be my worldview.
Okay, John, do you think that humans, like I was bringing up before, human beings make moral progress?
Yeah, I didn't catch all of that. That was a very interesting thing you were talking about. I agree with you. We make moral progress depending on the culture at the time, the time frame. You could look at it depends on what your definition of moral progress even is. If we're becoming less violent, people are living longer lives, and you're seeing more human flourishing. Absolutely,
sure.
We're making really strong moral progress without question.
Well, wait, then let me ask. But then that kind of kicks the can down the road, saying that let's take it like it. Do you think it's a fact human beings ought to be less violent, and like that fact is true?
A great question. The wording that you put in, it makes it difficult for me to answer, but I would say yes, I believe that that is true, that less human violence against other humans is a good thing, a sign of moral progress. I don't think that comes from God. I think that comes from people, from human beings, from societies and cultures. And it's
sure,
not
and
perfect.
I admit it's
not perfect.
But I think, John, and what's interesting here is I would agree with you that if you just start kind of like what Sam Harris does with morality, say, okay, we know what facts lead to the human species flourishing or not. And so you could make a kind of evolutionary argument that when you're less violent, we get more reproduction, we get more stable societies. But what I'm concerned about is, like, for me, I think there are different aspects of morality that don't make sense if there is no God. So, like, for example, do you think, here's one I'm going to try out, and we'll just see how it goes. Do you think human beings are morally responsible for their behavior in a way that is different from, like, other animals?
I do. When you talk about Sam Harris, to me, he gets really heady, and it seems to me like he's trying to come up with a way to say, yes, we can come up with objective moral values. And I kind of reject that. I'm more like, hey, let's face the facts. Morality.
So you're like a pragmatic relativist.
Yeah, I guess I'm pragmatic. But to answer your question directly, we have a pretty significantly developed intellect. And I would say that it's much more developed than that of a dog or a lion or something like that. So with our developed intellect, I would think, yes, we are morally responsible for the decisions that we make, and we're responsible for the consequences that those decisions create. And that's where
Well, John, let me ask you the next question then. If we're morally responsible and these other animals are not, aren't like a dog, a gorilla, a lightning bolt, us, aren't the things we do all caused by the same thing? which are just atomic reactions that are purposeless. If all of us, our actions are caused by the same thing, why are humans uniquely morally responsible if we're all made of and moved by the same stuff?
Again, a great question. I mean, obviously a lightning bolt is just caused by the forces of nature. A lion, you know, may have some sense of morality, but we can't communicate with lions. Why humans are, we do have conscience, we do have intelligence, we have capabilities that other animals don't have, learning from mistakes, communicating.
I want to drill down a little bit. So a lightning bolt are electrons and atoms in motion. A tiger, at the most, you get most basic level, you know, you've got hormones and chemicals, which are atoms and electrons in motion. So it seems like to me, we're all either equally morally irresponsible or equally responsible if we're all made of the same stuff. Otherwise, you're correct. We do have capabilities. I'm not sure what that, we have certain functions, but then it's like, but what causes us to have those functions if we're all, once again, like, can you cite something we're made of that is different from these other creatures that don't have moral responsibility? To me, that's the hard part for me. If we're all made of the same stuff, moving in the same direction, yet we're special, I don't see how that could be, unless maybe there's something immaterial about us that's different. I guess that's the quandary I have, and I'll let you have the last word to get your thought on that.
Sure. I mean, you're really articulating your point of view well. I just don't agree with that point of view. And to me, just my worldview, it sounds more like you're trying to convince me that wouldn't it be better if there were a God? And I would agree with you. Yeah, that would be better. But that's not necessarily the truth. You know, if you're looking for the truth, then I would say that our morality, it's not eternal. It's really just man-made, based on what I've already kind of talked about. And that's just where we're at. That's just the truth of the situation from an atheist worldview, which I do think is the truth. I recognize that there's a lot of people that very strongly disagree with me on that.
Sure,
I'm not arguing that atheism is great. It's actually pretty bad. But it is, in my opinion, the true thing, regardless of what we would like to be true.
You would make Nietzsche proud. We have the madman with the lantern. We have killed God, and how cold we have become as we're unchained from the sun. A lot of people, you know, quote Nietzsche saying, we've killed God, but actually the madman, thus spake Zarathustra, that comes from is pretty pessimistic and kind of depressing. But John, thanks for calling. I would love for you to call back. Maybe it might be fun if we do atheism again and you call back. You could share an argument or evidence for God you think has the most promise and where it falls short, and then maybe we could chat about that another time. But I'm grateful you called and hope you'll call back again.
Thanks, John. We got to take a quick break, Trent. We'll come back with there's a bunch more callers. We're talking about answering atheism, whether you're an atheist and you'd like some answers to your questions about our theism, or if you're a fellow believer and you'd like some help answering the objections that you hear to atheism, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. This is strange, but my book is on sale. It's so weird to talk that way. You can get it right now at 25% off at shop.catholic.com by using the promo code TEACHME at checkout. It's A Teacher of Strange Things, Who Jesus Was, What He Taught, and Why People Still Follow Him, a book intended to be put in anyone's hand who wants to know the basics about Jesus, but also maybe wants to know what it means to know Jesus. You can see the difference there, knowing the basics about Jesus and knowing Jesus. 25% off right now at shop.catholic.com when you use the promo code TEACHME.
It's all about the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God. just wanted to thank you for your show. It's made such a huge difference in my faith life. Because if you don't know why you're doing things and you're just going through the motions, it's totally pointless. But if you know why, it's infinitely meaningful. So you really helped me make a 180.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Do you want to end abortion? Halt the attack on traditional marriage? And ensure religious freedom for ourselves and for our grandchildren? To do this, we must convert the culture. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a grassroots initiative that recognizes this need and takes it to the streets. If you're interested in peacefully sharing the gospel in your area, visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Trent Horn, our guest. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, and we're answering atheism. If you've got, if you need some answers for atheism, or if you are in fact an atheist yourself, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. Trent, we go now to Columbus, Ohio, where Mary Alice is listening on 820 AM St. Gabriel Radio. Mary Alice, thank you for your patience. Go ahead with your question or comment for Trent Horn.
Yes. Hello. How are you both?
Very well. Thank you, Mary Alice.
Good. In response or a comment to your first caller about animals and pain that they may experience, and I'm a born and raised cradle Catholic, and I don't have any problem believing in God, but between the atheists and the animal rights activists, in talking with a very good friend of mine years ago, he made the statement that animals do not have rights because they do not have responsibilities. And when I thought about that, I thought that's a very valid and very succinct, in my view, I don't know, a very succinct analysis of whether or not animals have rights. And
right.
Sadly, yes, they experience pain, but so do human beings, which leads me to my next question. Why are people so geared towards wanting to protect animals and all that and don't seem to be concerned about human beings?
All right, Trent?
Yeah, I would say that the framework of whether animals have rights, that depends on what you mean by the term rights. Some people use rights-based language to describe morality and how we ought to treat one another. But there are other people, in fact, the use of rights-based language is fairly recent. Throughout the history of Catholic moral theology, rights were not as important as virtues or natural order. So I think when it comes to animals, we would say they don't have rights in the same way humans have rights because they're not moral agents. They cannot discern what the good is. And so they do not have the same rights you and I have, but because also they're not made in the image and likeness of God. And so they don't possess intrinsic value just because of what they are. They don't have the same intrinsic dignity human beings have. They have value in the sense that God created them and what God creates is good. But they don't have the same intrinsic dignity that human beings have by virtue of being created in the image and likeness of God. Now, that does not mean, however, we can treat animals however we like. Animals may not be moral agents, but they are moral patients. We could say that we have a moral duty to treat animals in a certain way, that we ought not be unnecessary. We not be cruel to them. We should not inflict suffering upon an animal just for the sake of causing suffering. Now, there's nothing immoral about eating an animal, for example, though people might have debates about whether the ways we use to farm, cultivate, breed animals might have unnecessary amounts of suffering in it, and people can debate about that. But we should be kind to animals because God has given us a spirit of kindness made in his image and likeness. As the other question, why are atheists, they seem focused on animal rights rather than human rights? I think many atheists would say they care a lot about human rights. They care a lot about born people, quote unquote, LGBT rights, things like that. Their framework for morality, however, because it's not rooted in divine revelation or natural law, it's usually rooted in utilitarianism, the belief that, well, we ought to maximize pleasure and minimize suffering. And so if they look at that, they want to make animals not suffer. They don't want born human beings to suffer. But they might think the unborn or someone in a persistent vegetative state is incapable of suffering. And so it's not really wrong to kill them. You can't harm them if they can't suffer. Really, the problem here with atheists and animals is not just about animals. It's about what is your fundamental moral view? Is it that there are certain natural laws, the natural law that tells us how we ought to treat one another, that we ought not use human beings as means, treat them as ends, don't kill innocent people, even if that'll make things better for everybody else? Is that your view? Or is it going to be, well, we want to maximize utility, and that could lead to all kinds of unfortunate consequences? It really gets down to the foundation of what your moral framework is to explain many of the differences between atheists and the non-religious. But don't take that as a blanket statement. There are atheists who are pro-life. There are Christians who support abortion. So it's all about getting down to the root of the individual's moral framework. So I hope that was helpful. Thank you.
Thanks
for calling.
Thanks, Mary Alice. Thanks very much. Answering Atheism this hour with Trent Horn, our guest. We go now to New Orleans, Louisiana. Peter, listening on 690 AM. You are up next, Peter. Go ahead with your question or comment for Trent Horn.
Hey, I'm a massive Trent Horn fan, so thank you guys.
Thank you, Peter.
I am a Catholic. Yeah, I'm a Catholic, but I do wrestle with like some skepticism of, which I know it's healthy to be skeptic, but
sure.
I guess like the resurrection and like things like that, like the virgin birth and all that kind of stuff is weird to me because I like Catholicism for the moral system. I think that there's no other religion in the whole world that like hits like all of the right points. I like theology of the body a lot, but like for me, what's hard for me is like Jesus Christ, like that there was a man who was God. And I think that the best evidence I heard was when, and maybe it was you, but it was somebody in apologetics said something about, if it wasn't true, why did all of these people die for it? Like the apostles, like St. Peter, my namesake, like being crucified upside down. And I'm like, yeah, that's crazy. Like to endure that suffering unless you really believed it. But then it made me, I mean, there's so much these days of people believing insane things, and I feel like they would go to their death for it. And you see some people, like suicide bombers, they'll go to their death believing in something that's totally wrong. So I don't know if you wanted to help clear that up for me, because that used to be really compelling evidence to me, but I feel like it's kind of hard with like all of the things that are obviously incorrect now.
Right, and I think, Peter, that the argument is poorly formulated, that this can happen a lot in apologetics for the resurrection. So let me clear it up for you. Martyrdom is not evidence for the truth claims of a religion. It is evidence for the sincerity of those who hold to the truth claims. So it's part of a multi-step process in proving something like the resurrection. So it's not, you're right, if martyrdom were evidence for the truth of one's religion directly, then Muslim suicide bombers, Hindu suicide bombers, I think I might be confusing. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of I don't know if they're Hindu suicide bombers. The Tamil Tigers who are in that same area are a secular group that commits suicide bombs. The Jonestown cult, it would prove all these other religions. Rather, what it does is that if someone willingly chooses to be a martyr or to endure persecution, that is strong evidence that they are sincere. So it has to be willing. So, for example, at Jonestown, the mass suicide there, a lot of it is, I think, you know, the cult leaders have their AK-47s and their guns, and people have to kind of go along with it. But when you have someone like Christianity, where you're going through a decades-long process of being persecuted by Jews and Romans, by your fellow Jews, I should say, where you could always leave or recant, you're willing to endure it, that shows sincerity. And you know, you're right. Now, let's take a Muslim suicide bomber. Let's say he flies into a building because of his belief in the Quran or his interpretation of it. That only shows he's sincere. because he's dying for a lie, but he sincerely believes it's true. But he has no way of knowing if it's true or not, because he wasn't around 1400, 1300 years ago when Muhammad was alive. The apostles, however, the fact they're willing to be persecuted and martyred shows that they are sincere, okay? They really believe this, and they're able to know if it's true or not. So they're definitely not lying. There could be another explanation. They could be sincerely hallucinating, but I don't think that's a good explanation, because Jesus appeared to groups of them. They're able to check his empty tomb to see if they're hallucinating. I don't think that's a good explanation. So I would say that martyrdom shows sincerity. And if you're sincere and you are able to determine whether or not it's true or false, and you continue sincerely believing, that's good evidence that it's true. And I think we only find that in Christianity. So that'd be my start of rehabilitating that kind of argument. Does that make sense, or do you have any clarifying questions?
Yeah, I gotta say, I love your answer there. That brings a lot of clarity, and it gives me a lot of peace as well. And if I could, I would ask, it would be awesome if you could say a prayer for me too, because I haven't been to Mass in a while, and I've just been struggling a little bit with my faith. So yeah, thank you so much for that answer, though.
I will. Well, Peter, don't hang up. Yeah, don't hang up on us. I want you to give your email address to our call screener, because I would like to send you I would like to send you two books. One is my book on Jesus, Counterfeit Christs, and it has a lot of these arguments I shared with you. I think that is a great book to learn about the person of Jesus and the apologetics. But then I would like to send you another book to really enter into the mystery of who Jesus is, a book that I recently wrote called Jesus, a Teacher of Strange Things. I've been working on this book for a while. I'm just kidding.
Nope.
Our host here, Cy Kellett, wrote Jesus. Is it Jesus, a Teacher of Strange Things, or just a Teacher of Strange Things?
No, but that's what it should have been. Now you tell me, Trent. Now that the book's already out.
It's called A Teacher of Strange Things?
And then the subtitle is Who Jesus Was, What He Did, and Why People Still Follow Him.
Okay, so Teacher of Strange Things. So Peter, stay on the line. We will give you Counterfeit Christ, Teacher of Strange Things. We will have that sent to you. And then, Lord, is pray that you send your spirit upon Peter and give him grace, courage, and conviction to be able to return to the faith, to be able to go and make a good confession, and to then go to Mass and receive you in the Eucharist. And I'll ask that our listeners will pray for you as well. Everyone, if you're listening, just say it right now. It'll take you 5 seconds, people. Say it right now. Pray for Peter that he can return to the faith and do in full communion with Christ and his church. 5 seconds. Do it right now. That's hundreds of thousands of prayers. That's got to count for something. And I hope you'll call back again.
I hope we get to talk with you again soon, Peter. I got to go to Kat in Terryville, Michigan, listening on 90.3 FM. Kat, you there with us?
I am, yes.
All right, go ahead.
Hi. So I don't think I would technically consider myself an atheist. I'm not trying to sound cliche. I believe more in the universe, and I do believe in the power of prayer, no matter what your religion is. I do believe that when people come together, something great happens. With that said, I've never been to church. I have been to church a few times. Unfortunately, I had a really rough childhood. I would like to think I'm a special case, because my mother would use churches to get in good with the pastor, and then she would seduce them and end up being with them, and then...
Oh, I'm sorry to hear
that. And I'm not kidding you. Once she... Yeah, it was a whole thing. But now, you know, I'm about to be 30 years old, and my 9-year-old daughter is asking questions that I don't know how to answer. And she's very curious. And I am so ignorant to everything Catholic, Christianity...
Kat, listen to me, because we're running up against the clock. So what I want to do is I want to stay on the line, give our call screener your email address and your contact information, stay on the line, and I will send you two books. Why We're Catholic is a primer to introduce you to everything. And then I think you and your daughter would benefit by learning about the person of Jesus. I want to send you Cy's new book, Teacher of Strange Things. Stay on the line. Give us your contact info. We'll send you Why We're Catholic and Teacher of Strange Things, and then call back if you ever have any other questions, all right? But thanks for calling in.
I'm so sorry that we had so little time for such a beautiful call. Kat, we're going to do open forum tomorrow and Thursday. We do it Tuesdays and Thursdays most weeks. If you want to call back and continue the conversation, we'd love to have that conversation with you. I hope you will stay on the line. get the two books, and then call this week, next week, whenever you feel like calling again. Trent Horn has been our guest. Thanks, Trent.
Thank you, Si.
All right, we'll see you tomorrow. I wish we had more time with Kat. We'll see you tomorrow, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.